Our God is with you.
And also with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
Jesus spoke this parable addressed to those who believed in their own self-righteousness while holding everyone else in contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, with head unbowed, prayed in this fashion, "I give you thanks, O God, that I am not like the others, greedy, crooked, adulterous, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes on everything I own." The other one, however, kept his distance, not even daring to look up to heaven. All he did was beat his breast and say, "Oh God, be merciful to me, a sinner." Believe me, the tax collector went home from the temple right with God, but the Pharisee did not. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, while those who humble themselves will be exalted. The good news. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Those who humble themselves, those who exalt themselves will be humbled, while those who humble themselves will be exalted. I read that and I think about the sorrows of the exploited ones mentioned in our first reading, and the exploited ones of today's time. I'm tempted to do a rant against the super rich of the world, the arrogant ones who care more about money than justice and who buy politicians who will cut their taxes, then pay for that by defunding programs that help the poor. I think of Episcopal Bishop Marianne Buddy of Washington, D.C., who dared to publicly call upon a certain famous billionaire to have mercy on the poor of our country. Her words, "Have mercy." She took a lot of heat from that, from men who exalt themselves. How I wish their humbling were happening now. But I will skip that rant because we need to ponder what today's scriptures say about everybody, not just the rich. Imagine yourself a Jewish person in that first century audience hearing today's parable for the first time. And you hear the characters being introduced, a Pharisee and a tax collector. Your judging mind kicks into gear right away. Right away, you think of the Pharisee as the good guy. The good guy in the story, a faithful and righteous observer of Jewish law, a promoter of your most cherished religious customs and traditions. The tax collector, on the other hand, you see as the bad guy. He works for the Roman occupiers. He gathers revenue from you to help fund the cruel oppression that you have to put up with daily. You're paying for your own oppression through this guy. To you, he is more than just a bad guy. He is despised and considered among the vilest of sinners. You hear Jesus telling you that the two are there in the temple to pray. One offers a prayer of thanks, bragging on himself for his virtuous tithing and fasting and for being unlike the tax collector and other greedy, crooked and adulterous people. The Pharisee is a caricature. Of course he is. He's a wild exaggeration, a fictitious person. I'm sure you can hardly think of anyone like him in today's world. So narcissistic, so unwilling to admit to wrongdoing. It's really far-fetched, but you listen to the parable anyway. The tax man is aware that he is hated. He might as well be a drug dealer or a rapist. He beats his breast and offers just a one-sentence prayer. Oh God, be merciful to me, a sinner. You're damn right he's a sinner, you think. You're there in the crowd hearing this story, and like so many of Jesus' parables, the moral shocks you. The tables are turned. In today's story, the bad guy is actually good, exalted, and the good guy is actually bad, humbled. The tax collector goes home from the temple justified, but the Pharisee did not. What? You walk away from there, scratching your head. The Pharisee's so-called prayer is obviously absurd, but there's something blatantly nonsensical about the tax collector's offering as well. Asking God, however you think of God, to be merciful is about like asking me to breathe or to watch the World Series. Of course, the God of the Scriptures is merciful, although unfortunately not always presented that way. Just a few chapters earlier in Luke's gospel, Jesus tells the prodigal son story, what some scholars call the central parable of the entire New Testament. You know the story, and it's shocking too. In Jesus' day, no father in his right mind would show any mercy at all to a kid who did what the prodigal did. No father would take such a son back in a million years. The boy could hardly have been more heartless and disrespectful to his father, asking for his inheritance long before he should have, and squandering it in ways that were sinful beyond words. Yet, mercy is what he got. And mercy is what today's sinful tax collector got. That's not fair. Doesn't the good guy Pharisee deserve more? Didn't the prodigal's faithful older brother deserve more? Mercy. Shocking parables indeed. Love is a name we have for God. It's in the first letter of John. God is love. The Islamic tradition celebrates 99 names for the divine mystery, and one of them is mercy. Mercy is central to God's nature, and it can't be earned or deserved. The God Jesus reveals cannot not be merciful. Yet the tax collector's prayer seems to be based on the assumption that mercy is in short supply. And you have to beg for it like a convicted criminal pleading for leniency in front of a judge. His prayer would have been better if it had just been thanks, a thank you prayer instead of a gimme prayer. Thanks for your abundant mercy, which I don't even have to ask for. The tax collector labels himself a sinner. We've all been trained to call ourselves that too. There have been times in my youth when I really kicked myself for my mistakes, then ran to the confessional. Growing up with large doses of that God the judge idea, I had not gotten past the image of a God who doles out rewards and punishments. And I feared God would run out of patience with me and smack me the way a parent might discipline a wayward child. Sometimes I'm still conned by that foolish image. All that fear thinking is just human projection. that our faith ancestors had trouble setting aside as well. You know, I'm into rewards and punishments, so God must be too. That judge metaphor is everywhere in the Bible. I'm sick of it. It's used in today's other reading. So the first sentence of the first reading today says that the Most High is a judge. A kind one, but a judge nonetheless. Our second Timothy passage today calls God a just judge, ready to reward the righteous. Like the tax collector, I still sometimes get stuck in that reward-punishment thinking, as if that were the only way to relate to the divine. You've heard me say it before, and it continues to make sense to me. Since no human image is perfect, God is perhaps best not thought of as a being at all, let alone a judge. Mystics have called the divine being itself, or pure existence, or as I mentioned earlier, just love or mercy. The purpose of prayer is to align my heart with those godly attributes so that I can live fully and help others to do the same. So prayer itself doesn't change things. Prayer changes me, and then I change things. Prayer plugs me into the divine energy, the spirit that fills the universe. It's not just a transaction, a request made to some kind of supernatural being for some kind of rescue. Be merciful to me, a sinner. Prayer is so much more than that. When done in humility, it is powerful. It pierces the clouds, as our first reading says. So Jesus presents us with two men praying in the temple, and there is something spiritually immature in what each has to say. One is excessive in his self-praise, as if he were more than human. The other goes too far in the other direction, as if he were less than human. Still, divine mercy is available to both. Mercy comes to us when we accept our common need for it, our common imperfect humanity. Human and humble are from the same root as the word humus, which means dirt or earth. Each of us is an earth creature, nothing more and nothing less. Each prays while being gently held to this amazing planet, kept humble, down to earth, by the gift of gravity and the spirit of a great mystery that we name love or mercy. The word mercy is from a Hebrew noun meaning womb, you know, uterus. Mercy is divine mother love. It makes me think of another prayer in Luke's gospel that we commonly call the Magnificat, meaning magnify. Although it is somewhat borrowed from an Old Testament prayer, it is attributed to the Blessed Mother. It is purely a prayer of praise. It says, "My soul magnifies, proclaims the greatness of my God." The words are a celebration of divine mercy. It is a prayer that expands Mary's soul, as good prayer is supposed to do. It is unlike the Pharisee's prayer, which expands only his ego. It also bears no resemblance to the tax collector's prayer, which is motivated by a fear of judgment. Instead of bragging or pleading, the Magnificat is a wow prayer. Wow. Marveling at the powerful and holy energy that humbles the mighty while exalting the lowly. Take a look at this wonderful Benjamin Wildflower print. There, it's coming up. It's coming. It's coming. Not there. Oh, you can't find it. We'll have to imagine it then. Use your imagination. Okay, great. Well, anyway, it's a beautiful image. It's a beautiful print by Benjamin Wildflower, depicting a tough Mary surrounded by the words of her prayer. Cast down the mighty, send the rich away, fill the hungry, lift the lowly. That's mercy. That's divine mother love. I would like to propose a new ending to today's parable. In my imagination, the two men walk away from the temple, each looking at the other, at first with suspicion, each judging the other. The Pharisee reviews in his mind the prideful so-called prayer he had just uttered, and he's embarrassed. Perhaps he wonders if the other guy had overheard him. The tax collector thinks of today's psalm response, Psalm 34, "Our God hears the cry of the poor." The two men think of their own spiritual poverty and their dependency on God for mercy. They stop and notice that the sun is shining on both of them. And they both notice, they both feel cooled by the same breeze. A beautiful sparrow flies overhead, and they both notice how gracefully it soars and how sweetly it sings. They both feel blessed, realizing that existence itself is a gift. Each remembers and says out loud the wise words of our first reading. The prayer of the humble pierces the clouds. For the moment, they realize their shared humanity. They know they have been gifted with unlimited mercy. They respectfully bow to one another and go on their way, justified. Your thoughts?